Here at KDVS, we're searching for a few public affairs hosts. Imagine being on the air talking with underrepresented peoples, or educating the public on pressing issues. In case you were wondering, anyone is eligible. Just contact us at publicaffairs@kdvs.org.
The following views presented in this half hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. I'm Katie Morgan.
And I'm Cameron Lalana.
And you're listening to Conspiracy Comrades
on 90.3 KDVS.
From early Native American and Indigenous stories to modern-day cultural references, Bigfoot is a legend that has maintained its cultural relevance through decades like few other conspiracy theories have. From its references in movies, television, radio, and literature, its staying power as a myth, legend, and perhaps real creature is truly impressive. Museums, FBI files, devoted fans, and television specials highlight the presence of Bigfoot lore in our everyday lives. This week, Cameron and I will be exploring the cultural impact of one of the United States' most prominent cryptids, Bigfoot. Welcome to Conspiracy Comrades.
Welcome to everyone. Thank you for joining us once again.
Yes. I'm sorry that I ran off to Oregon last week.
It's understandable.
I needed some answers. I found none.
As seems to happen with Bigfoot, there are many expeditions which do the same. And so I guess, you know, we can't be blamed for not achieving what hasn't been done in the last 200 years.
Sure. Did you get your hair plugs approved?
I did get my hair plugs approved.
That's great.
They told me my hurt was not very strong, but it was strong enough to support hair plugs.
Fantastic.
So now I can finally cover up the large crescent baldness in my head. I am tired of looking like a monk. I will not stand for this anymore. People keep asking me to sell them absolutions, and I do that, but I'm not proud of it.
But I'm not a monk.
Yeah, I'm not a monk. I'm sorry. If you bought any absolutions from me, they do not have any value. If you try to present those at Limbo, they're probably not going to accept it. I'm also not a very good counterfeiter, so.
My God. Okay, so anyway.
We're finally returning to Bigfoot. This is like our cursed monkey's paw. Every time we say we're going to do Bigfoot, we don't for 2 weeks.
We're very sorry.
But now we're back to Bigfoot.
We are back to Bigfoot.
And last week, or actually 2 weeks ago, we went over the kind of historical record of Bigfoot, especially the evidence of the FBI files and evidence in popular culture. Today, we're going to be going with a little bit more of a modern perspective and investigating some modern organizations which try to find Bigfoot.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then later on, we've got a little surprise. So stick around for the fun part.
Is that what we're calling it? A surprise?
Yeah. If we tell them now, they're going to turn off the radio.
I would too. It's okay.
So there are a lot of organizations. There are a lot of organizations today which still try to look into Bigfoot. A podcast I recommended last week, Wild Thing, does a lot of investigative reporting with many of these organizations who do a lot of really intensive work working with DNA, new forms of science, which are, you know, testing out environmental DNA in order to find unknown strands, trying to investigate casts of footprints found in the forest or evidence of Bigfoot that is out in the world. And it's a really interesting process. And there are many very serious people who take this, I don't want to be redundant, they do take it very seriously. And one of those organizations that brings these people together is the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, which I briefly mentioned last week.
Yes, it is a wealth of Bigfoot knowledge.
It is a big wealth of Bigfoot knowledge.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is quite interesting to look through everything. There's a lot here. Every report they have submitted in by people, a BFRO investigator goes over it. Mm. So they throw in their own opinions. Yeah.
They do a lot of work investigating these stories.
They actually do. One of the stories that I might read later if we have time, because I think it's kind of interesting. They have a full follow-up investigation from one of the investigators. He was like, I've had several conversations with this person. They seem very credible. It's kind of interesting to sit down and see how much work they actually do put into this.
Yeah. And it's incredible for some of them. They go really above and beyond. So the website as a whole, BFRO.net, has many features. It's got reports which are submitted by people who've seen Bigfoot, and they're separated by region to north, separated by America and Canada, then they separate by state, then down to county level. And each report is then followed up by investigator. They also have a collection of media articles, as well as some basic pages which have information about the history of Bigfoot under the reports tab. I believe they have a couple articles on pre-Columbian and early American reports and legends, which is really interesting.
I also just found that they have actual sound recordings.
Do they?
They do.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yes. I just found that, so we are unaware of how they sound, but...
Yes. We'll have to listen to those. I'm not a nature expert or anything, but now, you know, they say it's credible. This is their job.
Yeah.
They also have, every year, Bigfoot expeditions, where you can register with them, pay them $300 to $500, and then go along with a group of 30 to 40 people out into the woods to look for Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really very cool.
We said before the show that we should do that because we've gone from journalists to whatever we are now.
Whatever this is, yeah.
Whatever this is. Sorry, guys.
Sorry.
And it's a little too expensive for us, though, I think.
We aren't made of money.
We're not. Yeah. We're the opposite, in fact.
But, we could pay $300 to $500 to do this, or we could pay our rent, one or the other. I don't know which one's more important.
I mean, I think I'd rather pay my rent for the month, personally.
But this is in the pursuit of science, Katie.
It is.
We could find a whole new creature.
That is
find
true.
Whole new ways to exploit that and make money off of it.
Or we can do what I did last week and, you know,
just take off in a van.
Just take off to Oregon, yeah.
That's fair.
I was found. It's okay. I came back. It's all right.
I was found.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, which is the important part. And now we're back here doing the show again. So there's the Bigfoot expeditions. Although in the podcast Wild Thing, it's a good podcast. You should listen to it. The investigative reporter who heads it up, Laura Krantz, I believe, speaks with one of the people who leads these expeditions, and apparently the ones which anyone can join are a little bit less serious, a little bit larger. They do a lot of talks on giving people, talking through how their process of how they try to identify Bigfoot, which is when you hear a sound in the forest, when you find a footprint, when you find like some foliage broken or something, you've got to, at least they sit down and try to eliminate everything else it possibly could be. And, you know, their process. And then the ones which are a little bit more serious tend to be smaller groups of people of like 7 or 8, experienced wilderness people, biologists, so on and such forth, who go out and do like really intensive, very high tech work. So,
yeah,
it's understandable. They shouldn't let us on the high tech outings.
We will not be good assets to their team. Absolutely not. We would mess around way too much.
We would. Oh yeah, definitely.
I think that they'd kind of get offended, probably, if we showed up.
Oh, they'd get very offended if we showed up, if we went out into the woods with them and they're all trying to set up cameras and infrared things and, you know, get DNA samples. And then we're there in the back kind of like looking at Bigfoot memes.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, let's talk about a few Bigfoot sightings, because they do have many sightings, at least a few hundred, which they all go through. And like Katie mentioned, they have follow-up investigators who go through, speak with these people, sometimes even go to the areas. And then they rate them class A, class B, or class C. Class A being sightings, class B being findings of footprints or sounds, and class C being considered unreliable, which they don't generally publish.
Right. I also, on their main page, they have a section. It's called "What Are the Undisputed Facts About the Bigfoot or Sasquatch Mystery?" And I wanted to just read that really quickly because I thought it was kind of interesting before we get into more of these stories.
Definitely.
So... It's a fact that for more than 400 years, people have reported seeing large, hair-covered, man-like animals in the wilderness areas of North America. It's a fact that sightings of these animals continue today. Real or not, these reports are often made by people of unimpeachable character. It is a fact that, for over 70 years, people have been finding, photographing, and casting sets of very large human-shaped tracks. Most are discovered by chance in remote areas. These tracks continue to be found to this day. It is a fact that the cultural histories of many Native American and First Nation peoples include stories and beliefs about non-human peoples of the wild. Many of these descriptions bear a striking resemblance to the hairy, man-like creatures reported today. These are some of the facts. There is, however, much disagreement as to what these facts mean. To many, these facts, taken together, suggest the presence of an animal, probably a primate, that exists today in very low population densities. If true, this species, having likely evolved alongside humans, became astonishingly adept at avoiding human contact through a process of natural selection. To others, these same facts point to a cultural phenomenon kept alive today through a combination of the misidentification of known animals, wishful thinking, and the deliberate fabrication of evidence. The BFRO and its members take the former view. So,
yeah,
there you go.
Very interesting.
I just thought that was fun.
Yeah, it is. It's a nice... summary of the whole of Bigfoot history to the extent that that can be summarized in one paragraph, kind of a very spread out paragraph as yes. I now look at it.
Yes, it is quite spread out. Sorry about that.
That's okay. That's a question for the people who format the BFRO's website. So they have, as I mentioned before, reports which are segregated into county. So we've been bouncing around the website. I've been bouncing around a lot of California reports just because that's personally interesting to me. For anyone who's wondering, I think county with the highest number of incidents is Tuolumne?
I think that was the highest.
Okay, yeah, yes. With 27 sightings in the last 30 years.
Yes.
Yeah. Although there are also, there are none in Yolo County. So if you're listening here in Davis, you're quite safe from seeing Bigfoot, apparently.
Yes, apparently so.
So there are, I don't know which ones you have pulled up, but I've got a few reports which are from the last year, actually.
Okay. Yeah, I stuck to mostly the last couple of months.
Okay.
But some of these, they've only been added to the actual website in the last couple of months. The one I'm looking at right now is actually from 2003, but it was only reported on the 30th of May.
Yes, yeah. That is something you see with a lot of sightings, is that people don't tell anyone for a number of years until they happen to find a website like this, or finally tell a friend who, you know, I guess brings them to this website. It's not uncommon to read a report which mentions that, oh, this happened 9, 10, 20 years ago, but I didn't have anyone to tell until now.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you looking at right now?
Okay, so I am looking at a report of a law enforcement officer's face-to-face encounter outside Dover, Missouri. So this is in Lafayette County in Missouri. It is marked as summer of 2003, July more specifically. So I will kind of give a light. A lot of these are very, very detailed. Probably for obvious reasons, you know, if you want someone to corroborate your story, you want to say, hey, like, there's some very, like, specific details in here.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's talking about how he was across from an apple orchard that was owned by the Dunkel family who raised livestock. You know, just kind of fun little details like that. So I will try to give sort of the short version. So in the year of 2002/2003, around 3 a.m. during the summertime, I was leaving my girlfriend's house in Dover, Missouri, which is located on the Missouri River Bluffs. I was driving south on Coal Mine Road from my girlfriend's house on the gravel road approaching an S-curve. As I rounded the first half of the S-curve, my headlights lit up a large, dark, sparkly reflective object with yellow eye glow in the middle of the road. I began to slow down my car, and the reflective object hurried to the side of the road, still on all fours. As I got closer to the unknown object, initially I thought it was a black bear, which is uncommon in this area. All of a sudden, the object stood up on 2 feet, broadsided, and froze as I continued to approach it in my car. At this time, I observed an unknown creature that was fully covered in extremely long, approximately 8 to 10 inches long, matted hair. The hair was black and gray and fully covered the creature except for the chest/shoulder area, where the creature's skin appeared to be much lighter. So he basically, I'll just keep reading actually. I could see large pectoral muscles in the creature, and at this time I knew the unknown creature was a male. The creature had very broad shoulders and extremely long arms that hung down beyond its kneecaps.
Oh.
I'm just picturing Kanye West in the I Love It video.
The what? Sorry, I'm not a man of culture.
That's okay. Anyone who's watched the music video for Kanye West and Lil Pump's song I Love It,
got it.
That's exactly what I'm picturing right now.
Okay, got it.
I'll show you later, Cameron.
Sounds good.
Okay. I could not see the face, excuse me, or hands because of the long hair covering its body. The creature appeared to be approximately 8 feet tall and towered above my vehicle as I was about 15 feet away from it, still driving slowly down the gravel road. I would estimate him to be 500 or more pounds and was solid muscle. So that's basically what it was. He said, I've driven home from that area in Dover, Missouri for 5 years and had never seen anything like it before. There's no question about what I saw that night. I thought it was funny as well how there's sections on each thing where it's talking about, you know, location details, the nearest road,
right,
what they observed, other witnesses, if there were any. So there's one, there's a section that's just other stories. It says, yes, at Baltimore Bend Conservation Area, my cousin Philip had two separate encounters, once mushroom hunting and the other time squirrel hunting. So I'm glad that his cousin Philip is having fun.
Yeah. Philip is living his best life.
Yes. So, like we said before, they have follow-up investigation reports from BFRO investigators. So this one just says, I have had several informative conversations with the witness. As a law enforcement officer, both at the time of the sighting and now, he is factual and methodical in his memory and reporting of the incident. So basically, it's just a corroboration of what the guy said in the first place.
Right.
It's quite interesting.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. I think it is kind of cool that they have, you know, follow-up people sort of going in with this. Because I feel like a lot of people could be, you know,
could
hey,
just
yeah, I saw Bigfoot. Haha. Right. But the fact that they actually take the time to investigate is, I don't know.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
And sometimes they actually do a lot of work in this investigation. There is the investigator on yours, I believe, is Jim. Sorry, I'm looking at a different report. The investigator on yours is Carter Bouchard.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
bless you.
Yeah. So, yes. Bouchard, in another incident, this one's from January of this year, a Missouri resident was out on their property and they heard with their family and saw a Bigfoot after it began to throw rocks at them. Let's see. So they heard something was throwing rocks at them. They go out to look, this woman and her husband, and it reads, "After my husband retired, he's working on my truck at our bottom barn. As he pulled down there, he saw something he said was not a man or a bear, but it ran so fast that he didn't know what it was. He said it was big and fast. After that, he started finding footprints. He would come and get me and show them to me." So this was happening over a period of time. On the several occasions, I heard this thing holler. Heard wood knocking around, walking outside. This has happened through so many years, and there's so much to document. And it goes on to discuss the specifics of it. In this particular incident, the investigator actually went out to the location, and this is a really long report. Underneath, I think there are multiple investigators in this one. They've got pictures from when they went and investigated the area. They actually took a picture of a footprint they saw there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is fun.
It's a 14-inch track, it says.
14-inch track. It looks pretty deep.
It does, actually.
Yeah. That's actually something that's been... I was listening to, I think it's Grover Krantz, who's a Bigfoot investigator from the 1970s and 80s, who's very influential in this field. One of the things he really points out when you're looking at... When you want to look for fakes, which he was spent a lot of time looking at, you want to look at the indentations and you want to see something really deep, because if you're expecting this to be, you know, 10 feet tall, 600 to 800 pounds, you want a really... You want a heavy track, not like, you know, 150-pound human with some boots on.
Yeah. So another thing that I thought was kind of interesting, they do have a list on here. It's a geographic database of Bigfoot sightings and reports. So this is just in the United States. But I did think it's quite interesting. So the state with the highest number of listings of Bigfoot sightings is Washington with 667. California is actually the next highest with 441.
Hmm.
And then Oregon, which kind of makes the most sense after that, considering it's mostly a Pacific Northwest kind of tail, has 250 listings. What I did think was quite interesting, actually, is Florida.
Florida.
The lovely state of Florida.
America's lovely stepchild.
Yes. Actually has 325 listings.
Yeah. That's not surprising to me.
I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
I do think it's funny that actually a handful of states have more sightings than Oregon.
Yeah.
So Oregon, again, has 250 listings of sightings. Ohio has 290. Michigan has 219.
Wow. Washington is 667. That is a lot of sightings.
Yep. Illinois has 298. So there actually are quite a few Bigfoot sightings in seemingly, perhaps not random, but...
Places you wouldn't exactly expect.
Right. Like I said, I mean, Bigfoot is typically a very Pacific Northwest kind of creature. So it is quite interesting.
This is a smaller amount, but there are 70 sightings in New Jersey. So
yes. The states with the lowest number of sightings are Delaware and Rhode Island with 5 apiece. So North Dakota has 6. Nevada has 9.
I'm not even certain there are 5 people in Rhode Island.
Vermont
so
has
sense.
9. Yeah, you know, if you don't want to see Bigfoot, go to Delaware or Rhode Island, Nevada, North Dakota.
I'm really surprised about Nevada.
I mean,
it's a mostly desert, so that makes sense.
It's mostly a wasteland, to be fair.
They have to supplement that one with alien sightings.
That's true. Nevada has way more alien sightings.
Yeah, and serial killers.
I mean, their most recent report out of Nevada was in 2009. So a lot of these, if you look at them, a lot of them are like 2019, 2018, 2017. Yeah. There are a few, you know, 2013, 14, 2010. Right. But a lot of these are still like pretty updated. Yeah. You know, the last California one on here was from April of 2019, it says. So
pretty recent.
People are working real hard over here.
I'm surprised they're only 22
at the
in Alaska.
VFRO. Yeah. Me too, to be honest. I think it's funny that there's just, you know. Mm. It's the states that I like wouldn't expect. You know, like Florida.
Right.
You know, Alabama has 98. Which is like, I feel like Alabama is such a weird place for a Bigfoot to hang out, you know?
You know, maybe it just wants to, I don't know. I can't
do whatever.
Yeah. I'm trying to find a joke that's not deeply classist. It's not working.
Oh my God. I mean, Georgia has 132 sightings.
Yeah.
That's Georgia just doesn't seem like the kind of state that you would find Bigfoot.
Bigfoot likes Georgia peaches.
Oh, that's nice.
It's an all-American, very wholesome thing. I also wanted to highlight one report. Unfortunately, I don't have it pulled up anymore, but it was a report from an older woman describing seeing Bigfoot on a family outing. And she, in her witness section, adds that my granddaughter was there. She is 9. She is not very imaginative, but she saw it.
You didn't have to diss your granddaughter.
Yeah, you did.
you didn't have to.
You could just say she's a serious girl. You don't have to be like, my granddaughter couldn't imagine her way out of a paper bag. But you know, I guess when you're old, you just have to say what's on your mind.
Yeah.
What's on her mind
you
is that her
no
granddaughter,
punches.
Yeah, isn't gonna write a book.
Oh.
Well, I mean, maybe
she'll eventually.
Write a
She's
nonfiction
9.
Book. Yeah.
I wasn't creative when I was 9. It's okay.
Really, I fell off a cliff creativity wise when I was like turned 10.
Oh, I started getting creative like after I was 10.
That's good.
I was a very not creative child.
Huh.
Yeah.
I guess the world has to balance itself in some sort of way.
Yep. But it is quite interesting, I think, there's kind of a common theme here with some people being... A lot of these people, when they write these reports, are like, I know what I saw.
Right.
Because a lot of these people, when they write these reports, were like, I wasn't previously a believer. Like, I didn't think Bigfoot was real. You know, I thought it was just some kind of, you know, cultural legend, whatever. And a lot of them afterwards... are just like, this was definitely Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. I know what I saw. Like, it was 5 p.m. on like a sunny day. I saw what I saw. There's also a lot of people that are actually, it's kind of 50-50, but there's some people that are actually kind of afraid of Bigfoot. You know, some people are talking about, I saw what I saw. You know, it's very strange, but I think it's kind of interesting.
Right.
But there was one person in particular. There was a family in Cleveland County in Oklahoma. And, you know, like I said, it has like state, county, location details, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So under location details, it says, at this time, I don't want to share this information. It is very close to my home and I'm still coming to terms with what we saw.
Mm.
So a lot of these people are actually kind of scared. Like I said, this, it was 2 adults and 2 kids. But at the very end, she says, my whole little family saw this. So we have 4 people who now believe this thing is real. Since then, we have continued to hear low growls in the woods, what sounds like careful steps at night. I tell myself it's a deer or something, but I no longer believe it's our typical wildlife. And just this whole story, she's just very much like, I was very scared. This
Understandably.
Was a huge thing.
Right.
My son was screaming.
Oof.
Which, I mean, again, very understandable.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would feel if I saw like an 8-foot tall.
I think I'd react roughly the same way as her son.
Probably.
Yeah.
But it is quite interesting. Just a lot of people, you have your people who are like, oh yeah, I think that was Bigfoot.
Who are
and
really
you have
into it, yeah.
Other people that are like, oh my God, I don't know what to do anymore. Like, I'm so scared.
Yeah. I remember listening to an interview where one person who had seen a Bigfoot described it as almost as like a death in the family, because once you've seen Bigfoot, if you continue to believe what you saw and you don't convince yourself it was something else, as this person described it, it is a period of entering a weird state of knowledge where you know people won't believe you, so you can't tell them, but you believe this, you know, deeply that this happens. So you get this dissonance between what you know around the people, what the people around you will think if you say it, and what you believe in your heart to be true. Which is a pretty strong state of dissonance to live in.
Yes, perhaps so.
Yeah.
But there are quite a lot of, you know, very interesting stories around here. Like I said, I think that the follow-up investigation is actually quite interesting.
Right.
You know, it's, I think it's a good addition. like I said, a lot of these people that are talking about this, So like all the investigators that talk to these people, they always say like they seem credible. They were very willing to talk to me. The woman with the kids and her husband in the car, they said that they had like an hour long conversation about it. She was very pleasant, very forthcoming about it.
Right.
So, you know, either these people are seeing something that they think is Bigfoot and they're very willing to talk about it and say, yeah, it was Bigfoot, or, you know, they saw something, actually.
Saw something else, yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine a lot of these conversations are the investigators trying to tease apart how well the witnesses can identify a bear versus, you know, describing something as you when you look at it, you're like, okay, I can run to the list. This is not a bear, versus someone who's in a panic state and may not recognize a bear in the darkness. But at least in these reports, this is something I've noticed. Sometimes they'll add logs of the questions they ask, and a lot of it is trying to be like, okay, are you absolutely certain it didn't have this or that feature? Essentially trying to nail down if what they saw could be identified as a bear.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting. It's a very cool website.
Mm-hmm.
They have many outings this year if you have disposable income.
I was gonna say, if you have money that you want to spend on going on a Bigfoot expedition.
Yeah, and happen to live in the eastern United States, since that seems to be where they mostly are this year.
Yes, or, you know, northern Canada.
Yeah.
It's up to you. Whatever tickles your fancy more.
Whatever tickles your fancy. You can find it on their website.
So.
Yeah. So, I think we're, unfortunately, almost out of time. We've got about 2 minutes left, a little bit less than that. So we're going to be talking about some cultural aspects of Bigfoot. And last week we mentioned that Bigfoot is in, of course, about 30 or 40 films. You can find a full list of them on Wikipedia. And it's really captured the public imagination. Even among people who don't believe it, you can find Bigfoot in ads for beef jerky or cleaning agents. You can find Bigfoot as characters in cartoon shows. People know about Bigfoot. It's not a secret or anything. And, we could do so many episodes on the culture of Bigfoot. It's gotten so deeply into the American psyche. But I wanted to dive into something particularly interesting, and very luckily for us, we're almost out of time, so we can only...
Luckily for me.
Luckily for Katie, especially. Bigfoot erotica. So, I'm not surprised that this exists, because, as with all monsters, there's eventually some aspect of someone wants to sleep with a monster. That's Twilight. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of... Warm Bodies is a romance movie about zombies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eventually, everyone wants to romance monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And Bigfoot is not at all an exception.
Yeah.
So there are many websites on which you could find Bigfoot stories, archive of our own, Smashwords, fanfiction.net. I have been around a couple of these sites and found some stories about Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
Archive of our own is my favorite because... there's a lot of Bigfoot crossed over with other series, Bigfoot and...
The X-Files.
Yeah. Bigfoot and Naruto.
Which seems like a very strange mashup, to
very
be
strange.
Fair.
Yeah. So I've been reading some Bigfoot erotica, and I just want to say, first of all, please stop. That's my first comment.
I would like to follow that up with another please stop. Cameron saw my face when I had to read this.
Yeah.
Read at your own risk.
Yeah, read at your own risk. Today,
for the love of God,
that we cannot go back from reading.
No.
We're not going to go into this, but I just want to say, as a former English major, my main critique about this is that this is very poorly written. It's really just a lot of shock value. And frankly, Dracula, which was written in like the early 1900s, has more erotic value than any of these stories.
Oh my God.
So come back with these stories when you have gotten up to, I forgot who wrote Dracula, Bram Stoker. When you're about to Bram Stoker's level, come back and you can write these stories and make them full length novels, and then I will accept it. But for now, this is mere shock value smut. And please stop, because I'm looking at a passage right now, and I frankly will never be the same again. So that's my PSA for the day.
Mm-hmm.
First Result was probably the worst thing I've ever read.
Yep.
So anyway, that's where we're leaving you, Bigfoot erotica. Good night, everybody.
Oh, my God.
But unfortunately, or fortunately for all of you, right
probably
now,
fortunately.
It's almost 5 o'clock, so it's time to bring this show to a close. For now, I'm Cameron LaLana.
I'm Katie Morgan, and you've been listening to The Conspiracy Comrades. Our outro music is My Friend Bigfoot by Uncle Rock. It is what it is. You'll hear us again next week.
What are we covering then, Katie?
Cults! Heaven's Gate, Jonestown, the Manson family, oh my.
That sounds like a time to me. Have a good evening, y'all. And remember,
we've accepted Jenna Marbles as our patron saint. Have you?
He might scare you, but he don't scare me.
Ew.
Bigfoot.
Nice.
Bigfoot. I know a secret. Yes, I know. He lives in a cave where the mushrooms grow. And anytime I want to, I can go to see my friend. Is bad, Bigfoot, Bigfoot, but he is the best friend I've ever had. Bigfoot, Bigfoot, I was lost in the forest and I started to cry. I fell down a rabbit hole and got a black eye, but a great big hand picked me up towards the sky. It was my friend, Bigfoot, my friend. Bigfoot, stomp, stomp, stomp. Bigfoot, under a redwood tree. Bigfoot, stomp, stomp, stomp. Bigfoot, and me.
The following views presented in this hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. Good afternoon. This is Francisco Dominguez, Radio Informar. Very happy to be here today. I want to thank you for tuning in. We have a very special guest this afternoon. His name is Daniel Ellsberg of the Pentagon Papers fame in the early 70s. Daniel Ellsberg was very instrumental into helping to stop the Vietnam War. And he's going to be calling in any minute here, and I want to thank you for tuning in once again. We're going to start off the show with some Carlos Santana and John Mahavishnu McLaughlin, early album, the early 70s. So we'll be right back with the interview. Thank you for tuning in. And we'll be right back. Once again, some Mahavishnu McLaughlin, John McLaughlin, and Carlos Santana. It is titled The Life Divine.